This episode is brought to you by the International Parking and Mobility Institute, the world's largest association of professionals in parking, transportation, and mobility. Learn more at parking-mobility.org.
Hello and welcome to the Parking Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the $100 billion parking industry and the people that make it go. I'm your host, Isaiah Mal, and this is the Parking Podcast.
Views and opinions are my own.
Welcome back to another episode of the Parking Podcast. With us today is Mark Lyons, parking manager for the city of Sarasota. How are you doing today, Mark?
I am fantastic, Isaiah.
Now you're parking manager in Sarasota, and you're a IPMI board member,
yeah.
Staple there. But take us back to the beginning. So how did you get into the parking industry?
Well, it's quite interesting. I started in an aviation role at the Orlando International Airport. And that's really my education is aviation. And at one point I was overseeing the terminals, landside terminals, and my manager asked me to get more involved with the parking contract management. And what he really meant was, I want you to spend the next 120 days with our parking vendor and learn the entire operation from the ground up. So that's what we did. I was with the old, we had System Parking and AMCO System Parking. I actually left the authority and went out there for 120 days, learned every position possible. They took me through the ropes, and then I went back into administration where I oversaw the parking at the airport, as well as the transportation system, the taxis and permitting and so forth. And from there, it just went into private sector. I had some offers with the private sector and had the opportunity to get around the country with a couple companies and really had a great time, you know, learning about airport operations and transportation. And ultimately, I, over several years, wound up in the Michigan market and spent some time really learning the municipal side of operations. And it's there that I heard about the opportunity in Sarasota and left in 2011 to come down here and try to change things.
Well, I think you compete with Larry Cohen. We talked about the EGOT enacting where you can win an Emmy, what is it, Emmy, Golden Globe, Oscar, Tony, where he had worked in almost every sector of the industry. But I know I heard you airport, private.
Right, private. I've done the transportation side. I've done consulting and I've consulted on university projects, but never actually worked for a university. So that's my only miss right now, I guess.
Well, you're still young, so all these universities out there looking for a director, you know who to call. And now you're here in Sarasota. You recently presented at FPTA about what you did with the St. Armand's Circle Parking Garage. So talk a little bit about that presentation, and we'll start talking about this whole process.
It has been a process, and we also presented at the IPMI conference back in May. Where were we? In California, Anaheim. So we did the same presentation there. But essentially, you know, what we did is we talked about the change from parking districts that didn't want any paid parking and didn't want any change to how we got them into the position where we're building garages and we're starting paid parking in our parallel course too in the downtown of Sarasota, how we once removed all the paid parking systems that were intact, only for us to bring it back forward in a similar time frame as we launched the St. Armand's. So it's pretty exciting. It was a very arduous, complicated process. And, you know, it started at the ground level, working with business leaders, communities, the residents of these areas, and trying to get buy-in from all of those constituents. And I think what's different here is, from many other projects, and I know a lot of people go through this, is that we hit some roadblocks in our communications and through our workshops, but we never stopped. We always kept exploring how we could solve each party's concern and ultimately came to an agreement with the residents associations, the merchants association, as well as the property owners, that is the owners of the landlords of those merchants, and found a collective interest that would get us on the right course and actually, you know, convince them that, number one, we should get a special assessment that would help pay for a new parking garage, that we, too, could actually put a parking garage in a neighborhood and make it work with the community. And this is a community where it's very exclusive. There's only about 200 homes. There's water surrounding it. So it took a lot of discussion to try and figure that out. And then with the merchants as well, to help them understand what improved turnover and more capacity could mean to their businesses.
Yeah, this hits close to home because I'm working, you know, working in the municipal division for my company.
Right.
I'm in the process of with this right now, working with two cities that have no paid parking and then putting in paid parking. And I think you're right, just hitting that, this most important first step is hitting that, you know, that stakeholder engagement plan, just getting the message out early. But I'm assuming first there was a problem. So I guess what were you seeing the typical problems in Sarasota, such as not enough parking, people staying too long, employees parking in front of the businesses, or what were the problems you were seeing that led to you knowing that they need to put in a parking garage or put in paid parking?
Well, like all municipalities, Isaiah, you know, we did studies to figure out what was needed and identify problems. And the city probably had six very significant parking studies that were performed over the course of about 8 years before my arrival. All of them indicated that there were some capacity issues out in this particular district, which is out at St. Armand's near the beach here in Sarasota, but also in the downtown area. And so these two projects, I have to, you know, mention, of course, they parallel each other. One is out in St. Armand's, and that one was significant in that it was just one of these areas. It's got a huge circle in the center of the shopping district. And so, and then there was no other bridge from Longboat. If you're familiar with the west coast of Florida and the southwest side, you know, Longboat and Bradenton stretch all the way down to the Sarasota Bridge, and there are really no other ways to get off the island. So it makes it very difficult when, whether you're shopping out there or if you're a Longboat resident, you're trying to pass through the circle. Congestion was just miserable. And of course, we had employees on the streets and, you know, all the other typical symptoms of a problematic parking district. So trying to convince everybody that we could cure this and really cure everybody's concern was time consuming, but it really started at a sincere interest to tackle their problem and face-to-face meeting with them in several workshops to talk through potential problems. But one of the things we did first, Isaiah, is really educate them. So many people, as you know, are just aren't aware of the battles and the challenges. Yes, they recognize there's a problem in a parking area, but they don't really understand the symptoms or the incentives that are being created by, you know, lack of management. And so we spent some time communicating that, not only with the district out there, but we developed a parking advisory committee made up of leaders from all over the community. And our first goal was not to try and convince them of anything, but just educate them. So that was very beneficial.
I've never been, but I've seen pictures and just preparing for this podcast, just looked up the St. Armand Circle, and it's just beautiful. Just the downtown, the businesses, the just the walkability, the kind of like an island that's separated a bit, but it's a really cool place. So I could see how just the mention of building a garage being so taboo. So how did you start getting that momentum? I know one thing I've seen is getting sometimes the businesses, yes, there's some that oppose it, but sometimes you get these champions that are for it and they do more for the program than I could ever do just by being a vocal supporter of something like that. But what were the next steps that after meeting, after building the advisory plan, you saw the studies, we knew there's a problem. What was the last steps that got this over the hurdle to make this a reality?
Well, you know, we had to evaluate the financial plan and really understand what we could afford. And so there was a study done to look at traffic and turnover and occupancy and try to evaluate what various rates would drive in terms of revenue. And then, you know, there's a whole nother approach, and that was helping people visualize what would be acceptable in their neighborhood. Because as this St. Armand's district lays out, as you mentioned, it's very beautiful and pristine. And then the neighborhoods are directly behind the stores. We had two large parking lots that we wanted to look at and analyze their use. One had a significant amount of homes that surround that lot. The other one had fewer homes and a church. And so we sort of focused in on the lot that would be less impacted, but we started creating simple block designs and sort of trying to blend it in with the neighborhood, you know, compared to some of the landscaping as well as some of the architecture. And when we created these designs, we received buy-in from the residents. And then we took it, you know, over to the merchants and to the property owners and said, hey, look, they kind of like this idea. Where can we go with this? And so we kept getting this encouragement. We looked at the financial side, and we had to somehow come up with about 25% of the potential debt service on a new parking structure. And aside from using metered parking and garage parking revenue, we had to find an additional 25% of that source. So we actually talked to all of the property owners and merchants, and they were in agreement to accept an assessment that would last 20 years and help pay for this. And so when we put the final package together, there was additional steps that were very complicated, and really we don't have time to talk about it in detail. All that said, we took about 2 years to get that financing package complete and design complete, and February of last year, so it's almost a year now, the garage has been open, the meters have been operating, and it's just been working like gangbusters. The turnover has been great. Of course, all of our employees are off the street, which leaves a lot of spaces open for additional public to come in. And our garage is very successful. People love it. It's quiet. Our neighbors have told us, you know, these are residents who saw this huge building being erected in their neighborhood, said they never thought it would look so good. And, you know, it fits right in. It's very successful.
I tell you what, I don't want to ruin your spoiler here. I'm glad you got it out. But it's like, that is a beautiful garage. And I'm hard to please, but that was, I saw the pictures of that and just how you, it just blends right into the fabric of that community. And your community, like you said, agree. The residents there giving those, I saw some other people posted, you know, online or on the feedback and the survey, what they said, I love it. It's beautiful. It surprised me how it fits right into the neighborhood. Yeah. Another user said, we never thought it would look this good. So I thought you guys knocked it out of the park. What kind of thought did you put into the aesthetics? Was that part of the designer, just putting the plans, and that's what you got feedback from the community to help you make those final decisions?
Yeah, we certainly just didn't do it on our own. We used workshops to help develop some concepts, and then we employed a local architect who has a lot of skin in the game locally. He's done some other facilities and did our Palm Avenue parking garage, which is also very unique. You know, he put a lot of personal time in talking to the constituents and finding ways that would satisfy them. And, you know, they had some special concerns. Obviously, when you're in a neighborhood, you don't want a lot of lighting in their face. They didn't want the outpouring or overspill of light to be a problem. So we installed variable controlled light systems and set them up so that they're placed that the overflow will not stream out into the neighborhood and into the residents that surround the block. And then we put low-level lighting on top, and they also didn't want to see solar panels. So this was a challenge, because everything we were doing is trying to move to a ParkSmart certification of some level, and we had to find a way to put solar panels in so that they would not be seen from the street, and we accomplished that as well. So, you know, we just did a lot of things. Landscaping, as you've seen in the pictures, is really, really nice. And this exterior staircase that sort of meanders down the side of the garage really opens it up while you're in the garage, but also, you know, adds a real nice element to the neighborhood and breaks up the look so that it's not just one big blocked building.
You mentioned the ParkSmart. Is that something that you guys did obtain a certification? Is that something you're working towards?
Yeah, we were the 100th applicant, as I understand, and we are at this point on a track for a silver ParkSmart certification. I hope to see that real soon. Some final pieces were being added. Of course, I mentioned to you earlier today that we've just launched our bike share program in the facility, and that certainly is a piece that's very helpful on your certification.
That's great. And so if our listeners that don't know, ParkSmart is more or less the lead of parking garages. It's a way to certify your garages as being sustainable. So kudos to the city and Mark for that. That's really cool. One thing I want to talk about, the paid parking program. I know Donald Shoup advocates for putting that money back into the community. I'm sure the garage revenues are going back towards the parking program, the garage. Were you able to use that with the city as far as maybe the meters? Hey, we're putting this money towards, you know, sidewalk repair or lights or anything that, were you able to put some of that money back into downtown?
Yes, indeed. We got two different programs. In the St. Armand's program, we actually arranged it so all of the net proceeds out of revenue, whether it's meters or in the garages, would return back to that district. And they have a business improvement district that we work very closely with. And so we'll anticipate seeing that happen over the course of time. And that, of course, was another reason why the merchants and the property owners endorsed the financial program. In downtown, and we've launched metered parking in about 500-600 spaces in downtown, we also have guaranteed and written into our ordinance a return of a percentage of that gross revenue to the Merchants Association. There's a downtown improvement district that we'll be working with. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Certainly, those businesses, you can see it in the owner's eyes when you mention that this is going to come back and that we can improve signage and sidewalks and street signs and lighting and, you know, whatever makes a lot of sense, including, you know, we could even look at marketing programs that merchants are always just starving to have but can't always afford it themselves. We're looking forward at the end of this year to provide that percentage. I think we've initially looked at 5% of our revenue that would go back. And again, that's gross. It's not a net number. And they appreciated that very much.
Well, what a story to go from ripping out meters decades ago to coming in and being able to build a garage, put meters back in, all paid, to see that improvement, to see this success story and feedback from the community. That's quite a story. That's a sports has comeback player of the year. So this is our comeback city of the year. This is well done. Great story.
It really is a big change. And you know, not to tout my own horn, but if you consider over a year ago, we had absolutely no on-street paid parking. We had minimal paid parking in a couple of our downtown garages. That is to say, more than 3 hours, you paid something. And now we've gone to 2 hours free in the garage, which is still a significant loss of revenue. But, you know, we're trying to manage the flow of parkers at this time. And now we have over 1,200 metered parking spaces in the city. So going from zero to that in about 1 year is a tremendous amount of change. And it requires a lot of resource allocation and you know, training people and preparing for new management levels and really a lot of oversight. So it's been a real hands-on program. And at this stage, it's been very meaningful. I've got, as you mentioned, I'm on the board of directors for the IPMI, and I've got some good friends there. A few years ago, I was talking to him about whether or not maybe I should look at moving on. And, you know, a good friend of mine who will be nameless at this point, but she said to me, "Mark, don't you have some really great plans prepared for that city?" And I said, "You know, you're right. And it's probably worth thinking about staying." And I have to tell you, it has been. It's been a real rewarding time.
All right, Mark. So one thing about me is I'm very non-confrontational. I don't take criticism well. So I'm not in a good role here where I go in and talk to cities about putting in paid parking, dealing with the press and the businesses. Again, I do it because I know it's right. I'm passionate about it. I know it's going to help their businesses. It's going to bring in more revenue to their business by creating that parking availability. But what was that process like when you're getting beat up by the press, or I don't know if that's the case, or people are mad or against what you're having to say when you know what's right? How do you keep on with the message? How do you keep marching on, and how did you deal with criticism like that?
Well, I mentioned earlier, we put a parking advisory committee together that became very, very supportive. And one of their roles is to take our educational information and our ideas about what we might do out to their constituents, talk it up, and bring that back in. That was very helpful. But beyond that, I didn't hesitate over several years getting involved with discussions at downtown improvement district meetings or business improvement meetings or other small business associations. So one of the things I would do is go back to all these associations, and I wouldn't hesitate spending some time talking about the positive aspects of parking. And let's face it, I mean, your city manager and your board director, a lot of times they're not going to carry the positive message necessarily, because it just doesn't work in the big scheme of what they're trying to solve at the time. It's our directive, it's our objective to bring the good side of parking out in the forefront of our community. And so I would do that. And I became the voice of the community in all things parking. And so we have a public information office, but they would defer everything to me. And we'd oftentimes talk about, you know, the growth of our community. And so we'd give them an opportunity to, instead of just talking about parking a car, we'd talk about, look, we anticipate 3,000 new residential units opening within the next year. What does that mean to your community out on the street? What does it mean to curbside management? How are we going to handle these things? We have to move forward in a professional management way. So everything that I've done over the last few years has been focused on a message that gears them towards managing our parking system and thinking beyond just the ugliness of, I don't want to pay for parking. How could it be positive? So we did a lot of that year after year. And you know, when we launched our paid parking systems, many of our news media were already educated, and they could ask me intelligent questions about parking instead of just responding to the complaints. And I found that was very, very helpful. The last thing I wanted to share with you, the strategy of executing our paid parking system was unique in these two areas, the St. Armand's district, but also downtown. St. Armand's had a different flow and a different objective. Downtown was not about gaining revenue per se. It was about managing the street. And we had a number of merchants who coalesced last time to help create this scenario where the system was pulled out. But this time, I spent a lot of time talking to them all, and they still had, some of them had negative things to say, but our implementation plan was kind of unique in that we started in executing our plan in a slower part of the city where our judicial court system is at. Well, in that environment, many of these guys really don't care about paid parking. In fact, they're in front of a courthouse, and so, you know, it's easy to get them to pay. And so we started our system there with the idea that we would launch there, test our equipment, make sure it's functioning before we move into Midtown. And by the time we decided to move to Midtown, we already had 20,000 successful transactions in a small area. So we moved to Midtown. And by the time we finished with Midtown, now we had 75,000 transactions that were successful before we moved into the core of downtown. And all of the comments that would come to us were sort of silenced when we just were able to relay this information and just layer the positivity of not just transactions, but the revenue. Look at the revenue and how it's growing and what this is going to mean to the community and the turnover. You know, all these things, getting out in the community and sharing this kind of information is really important. I know a lot of times we try to protect ourselves from getting too much information out there, but in cases like this where you need to launch these programs, you just have to be bold, and you have to tell people what's good about this and hope that they can modify their thinking a little bit. It was really beneficial. It was a great experience doing that. It took some time, but the strategy, hopefully some others can use that at some point. All cities of our size struggle through, you know, whether or not they're going to get paid parking. But really, it's about that strategy of implementation, and how you communicate what you're doing is really key, I think.
One thing I saw was Ringling Brothers Parkway. So what is the story with Ringling Brothers and the city of Sarasota? How are they connected there? I think there's a museum or something. Did they start their business there? Did they retire there?
Yeah, John Ringling, who was the owner of the Ringling Circus Group back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, eventually moved to this area. He had to have a place where it was low population. There wasn't a lot of people to get in the way, and they had a train system that came through this area. So he established his residence here and actually went out to the St. Armand's Quay and built this little district in the streets. And so they named a lot after John Ringling, and his mansion stands today. It's a beautiful place out on the Sarasota Bay. They built their own museum, which would rival any museum in New York, you know, Los Angeles, any large city. It's just fantastic. It's got collections from all over the world, and it's just a beautiful piece of property. I invite and encourage anyone to come down here. I'll be glad to show you around. It's just a lot of fun. But, you know, we also have fun with that name. When we were building our last garage, there were a lot of recommendations that we put, you know, trapeze systems in the garage or an elephant trunk off the side of the garage for an architectural design. And we had to fight some of those off, those ideas off. But that's really what it's about. John Ringling is one of the founders of the city.
That's cool. I was going to ask that if you had some sort of wayfinding Ringling brothers in the garages, but. No, I love where I travel a lot for work. And to beat the grind, I always try to visit the local museum or kind of what makes the city unique or what's cool about the city. So definitely got to be there. Yeah. Let's talk about IPMI. You're on the board. We've yeah. seen the change from IPI to IPMI while you've been on the board. So what is IPMI working on now? And what are some of the milestones that taking place while you've been on the board?
Wow, it's been an exciting time, I'll tell you. And what a great group of people, you know, that are just so supportive and interested in your feedback. And when I was new, I was elected. I'm in my second term right now, Isaiah, and I'll be out for re-election again on the next term. But I'll never forget the first board meeting I attended. Everyone was welcoming. Everyone was seeking my thoughts and ideas and suggestions on how things were going. And, you know, I've never seen a collection of people who are so focused on improving our industry and just making us not just look right and look good and attractive to, you know, new people interested in our business, but just being fair to their membership and really trying to help them out with all the training programs and so on. And so I've been a real supporter of Sean Conrad's approach and Cindy Camel's training approach and the things that we've been doing over the last few years. And but I think the most interesting time for me was about a year ago when IPMI took the plunge and decided to change the name and really redirect a lot of resources into the mobility scheme of our operations. As we know, we're really morphing away from just parking. And we've got to do a lot to, I guess, whether you're in a municipality environment or a airport environment, a university environment, we are all seeing these other types of transportation systems being utilized. And so we really have to be at the forefront, how to make it meaningful for our operation. And so it was exciting when we made that change.
You said aviation. Did you ever fly or work on getting your pilot license?
Yeah. In fact, I started out in college at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, if there's any alum out there, and certainly flew a lot. I mean, who could dislike being 18, 19 years old, and on the weekends, they say, hey, you got to fly a plane all weekend and get hours. So, I mean, that's the coolest thing in the world. Absolutely. Got some license. I didn't finish there. I went to some other schools, but yeah, I definitely have my license and have spent quite a few hours in the air. Always enjoyed it. Over the last 10 years, I probably haven't flown. I don't think I've flown at all. But one of the things I have done is I've jumped out of an airplane.
I was going to say, I saw your presentation. So I know you know how to fall out of airplanes. And now I'm trying to figure out, do you know how to fly airplanes? So yes, tell us about this skydiving, which is something I will never do. So tell us about your experience there.
Oh my goodness. It was a birthday present. Fortunately, we were able to get a once in a lifetime opportunity to skydive over the beach and actually St. Armand's, where we were preparing this program for the future. And so if anybody's had a chance to see my presentation, that they'll see a picture of me falling over St. Armand's Circle. And I've used that picture in my presentations on many different occasions, you know, advertising. I'm looking at this problem at every angle and really taking it to heart, but it was a really great experience. And I landed on the beach. My daughter went with me at the same time. And, but there is no other sensation like just sort of scooting out on the edge of the door of the airplane and hanging on to a strut, waiting to jump. And the wind's hitting you, you know, at about 110 miles an hour. And, once you jump out of that plane, it's completely different. I can't even explain the feeling, but the dead silence and the sudden drop is just a real exciting opportunity. I'd love to do it again. Sure.
Yeah. One of our early podcast guests talked about a story where her chute didn't come out so that they had to use the emergency that comes with two, thankfully. But She did one of those. I don't know if yours is like that too, where there's like two people connected. You have like a helper, and he did the emergency one. But man, that's just too much for me. You know what they say? If at first you don't succeed, skydiving's not for you. So I'll pass. So anything else personal you like to do when you're not parking cars?
Well, I'm a family guy. I love my family. I've got three kids that are scattered around the country. Of course, we moved them all over the place as I was in the parking industry. So they've experienced every section of the country, and now they're scattered like that. I have a grandchild, so I'm really, really happy. My wife has been a real supporter. You know, she likes to say she's followed me everywhere I've taken them, which is quite as I said, all over the country. But I play guitar. You know, love doing that. And just spending time hiking and being with the family is, you know, my big focus.
Well, yeah. We know Gary plays the bass, you play the guitar. So we got to find someone in parking that plays drums and put together a little parking band.
Let's get the band together. Yeah.
Parking professionals. I love it. All right, Mark, it's been a blast. Thank you so much for all the wisdom you've imparted here on putting in paid parking. Such a great story, again, from a city that ripped out many years ago to where they are now, and to see a city like that succeeding. That's a great story. And thanks for taking the time out of your day to share it with our listeners.
Been fun, Isaiah. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a great week, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
To our listeners, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Parking Podcast. Please leave us a review and tell a friend about our show. It would mean a lot. This has been a production of Synchronicity Media, produced by me, Isaiah Mao. Our music and score is by Zona. Our show art and design is by the talented Allison Gilley. You can follow us on social media at The Parking Podcast, or you can find our website with bonus content at parkingcast.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks. This episode is brought to you by the International Parking and Mobility Institute, publishers of the industry's only soup-to-nuts textbook about all things parking. It's called A Guide to Parking, and several of our guests from previous episodes have contributed to this wonderful little textbook. Learn more and order your own copy at parking-mobility.org/textbook.
What's good about parking, and address the ugly sides of parking, I would do that. And
Was that yours?
Can you hear that? I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I won't be able to use it, so just sure. Sorry, if you remember where it started, just start all over.